This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Hello everyone, and thank you for joining us. Today we continue to talk about the Holodomor. But before we get into today's episode, I'd like to mention an important event coming up in Auckland. On Friday, 5th of December, the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs is hosting the launch of the new book, Empire Unmasked, War at the Heart of the Fracturing World, by Cyril Kucher. The discussion will focus on Russia's war of aggression, Ukraine's defense, and the lesson New Zealand can draw from this war. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. with tea and coffee, and the event runs from 6 till 7:15 p.m. at Europe House, Auckland University of Technology, Level 16, 56 Wakefield Street. Limited edition copies will be available for purchase, with proceeds supporting Ukrainian resilience and defense. If you are in Auckland and interested in attending, make sure to register online before stopping by. Cyril is Ukrainian-New Zealander, a researcher and a technology professional. He is an internationally published author, with work appearing in the international affairs outlets of New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and Ukraine. In his talk on 5th of December, he will focus on how technologies are transforming the war and on global alliances, and will also outline the key ideas from his book, particularly how Russian war against Ukraine is a defending fight of Russia's continuous ideological imperialism against the rules-based order that reshapes the norms and security of our world.
Вітаю, Borscht Club listeners! I'm Cyril Kucher, author of the book Z Empire Unmasked, War at the Heart of a Fracturing World. This book explains why the Russian war against Ukraine is not just regional. It's a global turning point for peace and security. Join us soon for more. And if you are in Auckland on the 5th of December, come to the book launch hosted by New Zealand Institute of International Affairs. Register now on their event page. Have a good one.
To register for the event, go to the New Zealand Institute of International Affairs website and check the upcoming events page. Or send an email to nziia@vuw.ac.nz. You'll be able to hear my interview with Cyril in the upcoming episodes of Borscht Club. Let's continue our conversation about the Holodomor. For those who missed the previous episode, the Holodomor was a man-made famine in Ukraine in 1932-1933, engineered by Stalin's Soviet regime. It was not the result of drought or crop failure. It was a deliberate act. The Soviet authorities forcibly confiscated all food from Ukrainian villages, imposed blockades that prevented people from leaving to find help, and punished even the collection of a few grains from the fields. Millions of Ukrainians were trapped in conditions where survival was impossible. The purpose of the Holodomor was to break the Ukrainian nation, suppress resistance, and eliminate any movement toward independence. At the same time, the Soviet government hid the famine, falsified records, and denied its existence to the world. Today, the Holodomor is recognized as an act of genocide, and remembering it matters not only for Ukrainians, but for all who stand against crimes against humanity. Almost every Ukrainian family has a story connected to the Holodomor. For decades, people didn't speak about it. The tragedy was deliberately hidden, and those who survived were often too traumatized to recall it, or too afraid of the Soviet repressive system to say a word. Some remained silent even after immigrating overseas, far from the regime, still fearing that speaking about the Holodomor could put them in danger. Because of this, many family stories were never told and remain lost to history. But we still have the chance to share the stories that have survived. Here is Serhii's story. My grandparents never spoke about the Holodomor. All I know is that my grandfather's younger brother died in 1933, when he was about 2 or 3 years old. But I do remember how the grandfather of a boy from the neighboring building once told us that mothers tried to feed their infants with their own blood because they had no milk, and that human flesh tasted sweet. I was about 4 years old then, but I remembered it all my life. By the way, people in the cities didn't know about the famine in the villages for a very long time. There was no internet back then, and when the peasants tried to reach big cities like Kharkiv, they were blocked and not allowed in. And here is another story, the Serhienko's family account, which Craig shared with us. When my mother and I went to Ukraine in 1993 to visit her relatives in Lubny Poltava region, she told me and showed places where she saw dead bodies lying in the streets. There were about 7 million people that died of starvation. About 30% of them were children. In the Central Park, she remembered children that were left there crying, screaming and dying while their mothers went to forage for any odd vegetables that they could find to make soup. I also visited my cousin on my father's side in 2011. And as we went for a walk on the collective farm in Chutivka, Poltava region, I noticed many dips in the ground where it should have been level. I asked my cousin Vasil Serhienko what they were, and he replied that it was the bodies of people and in some cases whole families who died during the Holodomor. Unfortunately, there were no Orthodox crosses or sign of tombstones to care for those unfortunate people. My father, who also was called Vasil Serhienko, came from Denisivka in the Poltava region, not far from Lubny. His family had their farm confiscated during Stalin's collectivization program, but did not say too much, although I know he went through hard times as well. He had three brothers. His oldest brother, Grigory, who was a teacher in the village, was arrested by the KGB and was either executed or sent to Siberia. We never heard from him again. Dad ended up in a labor camp in the Arctic Circle north of Moscow. His next younger brother was killed when the Germans invaded, and his war memorial was in Chutivka, which I visited. I couldn't trace his youngest brother in my travels there, so I'm not sure whether he survived all the tragedies during that time. We were one of the fortunate families that were able to leave for the West. He also had a younger sister, but she died at a young age. Not sure what she died from, but it could have been from the Holodomor. For centuries, Ukraine lived under foreign rule. After the mid-17th century, its lands were divided between Poland and the Russian Empire, and Ukrainians faced political, cultural, and economic suppression. The Russian state pushed colonization, Russification, and the fake idea that Ukrainians were simply a branch of the Russian people. Despite this, Ukrainians maintained a strong national identity and repeatedly fought for independence. In the early 20th century, Ukraine briefly created its own state, the Ukrainian People's Republic, but it was crushed by Bolshevik forces. The Soviet regime then established a totalitarian system in Ukraine, controlled directly from Moscow. During the 1920s and early 1930s, the USSR introduced harsh collectivization. Peasants were forced into collective farms labeled kulaks or enemies if they resist, and thousands of protests broke out across Ukraine. Ukrainian rural identity, individuality, and strong national consciousness were seen by the Soviet leadership as a threat to the unity of the USSR. To break this resistance, Stalin's regime designed a policy that targeted Ukrainian peasants who formed the core of the nation's cultural and political identity. Under the guise of grain procurement, the state confiscated not only harvest, but all food. Entire regions were blocked from travel. Only Ukrainians and the Cuban population were forbidden from leaving. Over 22 million people were physically sealed inside the famine zone. These actions were not accidental. They were deliberate measures aimed at weakening and destroying a significant part of the Ukrainian nation. Stalin viewed the Ukrainian peasantry as the core of Ukraine's national identity, the carriers of language, culture, and traditions. To break this, in 1932, the Soviet regime imposed an impossible grain quota on Ukraine, 356 million puds of grain. Stalin's closest allies, Kaganovich and Molotov, personally came to Ukraine to enforce it, fully aware that famine had already begun. The Holodomor was carried out through laws that legalized violence and mass killing. Around 400 archival documents confirm the deliberate nature of these actions. When collectivization began to fail and peasants peasants tried to leave collective farms, the regime responded with a brutal decree known as the Law of 5 Ears of Grain. It equated all collective farm property with state property and introduced extreme punishments. Hungry peasants who picked leftover even 5 ears of grain from the fields could be sentenced to 10 years in prison, confiscation of all belongings, or execution. Special brigades were sent to villages to search homes and seize every bit of food. These searches were accompanied by terror, violence, and humiliation. The next step in the genocidal policy was the introduction of natural fines, which allowed the state to confiscate not only grain, but all food and any property that could be traded for food. No other Soviet republic faced anything like this. In November 1932, under pressure from Molotov, the Soviet leadership introduced a repressive system called blacklists. Villages and districts placed on this list were completely blockaded. All food was seized, trade was banned, supplies were cut off, and the population was surrounded by police and military units. This regime was used only in Ukraine and the Ukrainian-majority Kuban region. The Kremlin created living conditions meant to destroy part of the Ukrainian nation by removing all food and blocking escape. A decree signed by Stalin and Molotov in January 1933 forbade Ukrainians from leaving the famine zones. The regime also denied that the famine existed and refused international humanitarian aid. By spring 1933, mortality reached catastrophic levels. In June, the peak of the Holodomor, around 28,000 people died every day, 1,168 per hour, about 20 every minute. Limited food loans were given only to those still capable of working in collective farms. All this happened while the USSR kept large grain reserves and continued exporting food. These actions show clear intent to destroy a part of the Ukrainian nation. Millions of Ukrainians were killed. Exact numbers are impossible to determine because the Soviet authorities hid evidence, banned recording hunger as a cause of the death, falsified records, and confiscated registry books. Secret lists found today show that actual deaths were at least twice the official numbers. Entire families and villages disappeared, and many victims were never registered at all. The Soviet Union managed to convince much of the international community to not see the mass killing of Ukrainians through propaganda and by bringing certain foreign journalists. Still, some reporters told the truth and diplomats left written accounts of what they witnessed. The regime tried to erase every trace of the millions it murdered, but it failed. With Ukraine's independence, the silence was finally broken, and the truth about the Holodomor resurfaced despite decades of Soviet suppression. Today we continue our conversation with Olya Soroka, head of the Holodomor Committee of the Ukrainian World Congress and chair of the Global Holodomor Descendants Network. Olya is joining us by phone from Chicago, and the connection may fluctuate a little. So thank you for your patience if the audio shifts. In the previous episode, Olya shared her family story and spoke about why remembering the Holodomor and recognizing it as genocide is so important. It's worth noting that not all countries have officially recognized the Holodomor as a genocide of the Ukrainian nation, and New Zealand is still among those that have not taken this step. Olya, there are still countries that didn't recognize Holodomor as a genocide. Why do you think it took so long for the world to acknowledge that it is a genocide? And are there still myths or misinformation about the Holodomor that you think need to be challenged?
Well, for centuries, Russia was and remains a very controlled country where media is controlled by the government. People live in fear to say anything different than what the government tells them, and the truth is punished by death. This was also true for Ukrainians living in Ukraine who really didn't know about the Holodomor until recently. The traumas that their families suffered were so severe that silence was their way to survive. And the fear of reliving that suffering paralyzed them from mentioning word about it. I talked to people who have escaped the genocidal war and are living in our communities here near my home outside of Chicago. And their families never talked about the Holodomor. However, when they see the work that we're doing with capturing the stories of familiar experience, they come out and then they sit down with their family and say, yes, this happened. And this is what my family went through. So we hear this in almost every interview conducted with a survivor or a descendant. My aunt was an example of this. As someone who lived in the United States since 1950, she refused to be recognized as a Holodomor survivor because she feared the communists would arrest her and send her to a gulag in Russia. She did this almost until the last year of her life. It wasn't until the fall of Soviet Union that actual records were found confirming these stories by eyewitness decades. With the current technological advances and accessibility to social media, it's become harder for Russia to hide the truth. That does not prevent them from still denying it was a man-made famine, genocide, even to this very day. And let's face it, many countries were dealing with their own issues and did not want to take on another country's problems because it really didn't affect them, or so they thought. But just as some people think today, the genocidal war in Ukraine doesn't really affect them, they're very mistaken. And they're beginning to wake up to the understanding that Ukraine today is defending freedom for all of Europe. If Ukraine falls and nobody helps them, then Russia will continue. They will feel that they are that they can move forward, and you will start seeing the Eastern European countries fall one by one. That's why those countries that used to be part of the Soviet Union are preparing much more than the countries that were not subjugated to the Soviet Union.
What does international recognition mean to descendants or survivors and to Ukrainians?
To have international recognition, or recognition by any country, means that the world understands and has compassion for the horrible suffering that is part of our Ukrainian history. With this, we have hope that when we acknowledge the Holodomor for what it was, a deliberate genocide, the world can learn from it and not allow it again. Recognition validates the truth as told by eyewitnesses and survivors, observers and descendants, and removes the Russian label of liars from those innocent victims. It also uncovers what Russia really is, a liar about the Holodomor. They inflicted unspeakable horrors on millions of innocent men, women, and children, and they lied about it. And what's worse is they continue to lie about it, even though they know the truth themselves. But they lie about a lot of things. Unfortunately, the world has not learned its lesson, as evidenced by the many genocides around the world.
Olya, how does remembering the Holodomor help us understand what's happening in Ukraine today? Do you see parallels between Stalin's policies back then and Russia's current war against Ukraine?
Today's war in Ukraine follows Russia's pattern, as we have seen throughout history. Ukraine is a vital part of the perpetual lie told by Russia about its history, culture, religion. Without Ukraine, they have little to show for themselves. So just like before, when Ukraine voted independence and then kicked out Russian puppets who led the country and then made moves to return to their true European roots, that was just too much for Russia. Putin took the playbook of the person he idolizes, Stalin, and we see many of the same tactics used under the pretense of protecting Russian population in Ukraine. People should really ask, how did that Russian population get so big in Ukraine? Well, after Ukrainians were murdered by the Holodomor, Stalin resettled their homes with Russians that he moved in from Russia. He banned the Ukrainian language, eliminated Ukrainian studies in school, and basically Russified Eastern Ukraine. Ukrainians who survived stayed silent and complied as a means to survival. That is what is happening as part of the Russian genocide, the war on the occupied territories of Ukraine today. The army came in, destroyed the cities and villages, raped, murdered, pillaged, plundered. They murdered, arrested the Ukrainian occupants and all the intelligentsia and the religious leaders. They burned the wheat fields or stole the harvest and sent it to Russia to be sold on the international market by Russia. They stole orphans and sent them to Russian indoctrination camps. They are currently and have been moving Russians from Russia into the homes of the very Ukrainians they killed. They banned the Ukrainian language. They eliminated Ukrainian studies in school. They installed puppets to run the regional governments. If that doesn't sound like the Holodomor genocide, I don't know what does.
Why is historical memory so important for national identity and survival?
Understanding Ukrainian history is vitally important to, number one, understand who we are as a nation and why we are the way we are. It gives you a window into your roots that go back millennia and not just decades or centuries. It helps you understand why current events are happening in your life. The current war didn't happen just because of something we did in 1991 or 2005. It happened because Ukrainians have never given in to Russian domination, and Russia can't deal with that. It gives you the ammunition to fight the lies spread by the world's best propaganda machine, Russia. The one thing that Russia does better than just about anybody is propagate their lies through media, through individuals, through apologists. Understanding our national history gives you an immense sense of pride in your heritage for all the great contributions Ukrainians have made to the world, their peace-loving nature, their ability to build a nation so respected that it is so desired by imperial devils, the resilience to withstand multiple unspeakable horrors, a strong faith in God despite the many crosses that the nation has had to carry, and the determination to live free and succeed in a world that sometimes watches history unfold like it's a TV soap opera. Understanding Ukrainian history should help us to make changes so that we never go through another Russian-imposed genocide again. The Holodomor was not the first, nor was it the last. The Russian Empire, the Soviet Union, and the Russian Federation have committed several genocides against the Ukrainian nation. And understanding our Ukrainian history must help us to make sure this is the last, that we never allow Russia or any other imperial nation to do this to Ukraine ever again.
Thank you so much, Olya.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope that I've been able to share some facts about the Holodomor and about Ukraine and what's happening and why, so that your listeners can better understand what is really happening.
And this brings us to the end of our two-part conversation about the Holodomor, one of the darkest and least understood tragedies of the 20th century. Over this episode, we have talked about what the Holodomor really was. Not a natural disaster, not a tragic accident, but a deliberate act carried out by Stalin's Soviet regime to break the Ukrainian nation. We also looked at how the truth was hidden for decades. Survivors were silenced by trauma and fear. Archives were falsified or destroyed, and the Soviet Union worked hard to convince the world that nothing had happened. Yet the memory survived in families, in whispered stories, in the behaviors passed through generations, and in the work of researchers and communities who refused to let the truth disappear. Through the voices we heard, including our conversation with Olya Soroka, we were reminded that the Holodomor is not just history, it's a warning. It shows what happens when a totalitarian regime decides that the entire nation is a threat. And it shows why remembering is not optional, it is a responsibility. Because forgetting creates the very conditions that make such crimes possible again. And today, as Ukraine faces another genocidal war, the parallels are impossible to ignore. Russia is once again trying to destroy Ukrainian identity, culture, and life itself. The missiles, the bombed schools, the shattered neighborhoods, they echo the same logic that drove the Holodomor. History doesn't repeat word for word, but it does rhyme with terrifying accuracy. So, as we close this this chapter, remember this. Memory is not just about the past. It is about recognizing truth, defending dignity, and refusing to let darkness settle where light can still reach. The Holodomor must be remembered, not only by Ukrainians, but by everyone who believes in human rights, democracy, and the value of human life. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourselves. And until next time. Слава Україні! Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.